Welcome to Simply by Deal HQ. On this podcast, we engage thought leaders on topical issues around law and business in the most simplistic manner.
Everyone, welcome to the first episode of season 2 of Simply by Deal HQ. On this episode, we will be discussing the recently enacted 2023 Appropriation Act for Nigeria, the country's rising debt profile, and the implication for local businesses. As you all know, the 2023 Appropriation Act has now been signed into law, specifically on the 3rd January, and contrary to the custom of passing the Complementary Finance Bill alongside the budget, the passage of the bill was delayed owing to conflicts with fiscal terms in the earlier enacted Petroleum Industry Act. The Act has appropriated a total expenditure of 21.83 trillion, which happens to be Nigeria's largest budget to date, and which happens to be 20% more than the 2022 total appropriation. This is expected to be partly funded from government-generated revenue, while the deficit of about 11.32 trillion will be funded from privatization proceeds and multilateral and bilateral loan drawdowns. As can be imagined, the tail on everyone's tongue following the passage of the budget has been the ballooning rate of our public debt profile vis-a-vis shrinking or almost non-existent reserve, the dire economic forecast, just to mention a few. Our total public debt profile as of today stands at about 44.06 trillion. With the inclusion of ways and means advances from CBN, that profile goes up to a whopping 77 trillion naira. Today, we will be joined by my guest who will be analyzing the 2023 budget and also giving us his opinion on the federal government's debt management strategies and the implication of the government's economic and fiscal policies on Nigerian businesses. My guest is none other than Mr. Opeyemi Agbaje, who is the founder and CEO of RTC Advisory Services Limited. RTC is a leading strategy and business advisory firm, while Mr. Agbaje is a renowned economist, policy expert, and strategist. Thank you so much, Mr. Agbaje, for making the time to join us on Simply today. It's such an honor to have you.
It's my pleasure and privilege.
Thank you, sir. So without wasting more time, I'm just going to jump into this very interesting conversation. So my first question to you is, a lot of people wonder, we are a few months into the national elections in Nigeria, and it will be interesting to predict what will happen to the budget after a newly elected leadership takes over the reins of power in May 2023. And for me, I don't think I've ever taken notes, but I wonder what has been the historical pattern in Nigeria. We typically change guards in May of any particular election year. And I don't know what you have seen as prevalent in this country. Do the new administration typically accept, adopt, and administer the budget passed by their predecessor? Or is it usual to expect that there will be supplemental amendments to align the budget to the economic and fiscal strategies of the new government? Again, whether it is this way or that way, how does it impact businesses and how should business people position to respond?
Thank you very much. Very good question. First of all, let's do a little bit of history. So in 1999, we elected the president, but he was re-elected in 2003. So this concern did not manifest. The incumbent was re-elected and therefore continued. He is in effect his fifth term. That also happened with Muhammadu Buhari in 2015 and 2019. But we've had some transitions to a different person and a different government. Obasanjo to Yar'Adua, and then Jonathan took over from Yar'Adua midstream. And then, of course, we had Buhari take over from Jonathan. The practice that has been established to the limited amount of precedents available is that the new government typically would enact a supplementary appropriation bill act to the model spending according to his own strategies, priorities, and policy posture. So my expectation will be that anybody will elect in February, soon thereafter, will probably have to design a supplemental appropriation in between his election and his swearing in May, and then get that supplementary appropriation passed by the National Assembly to reflect priorities.
Absolutely. So let me just pick on that. So does that mean that we shouldn't pay too much heed to some of the opinions and comments that are coming from thought leaders such as yourself as to the 2023 Appropriation Act and its issues, given that we are expecting that, you know, they are likely to be, you know, changes, and, you know, these changes will be dependent on the policy posture of the new administration? What's your take on that?
I won't say that because that could be misleading. This budget, for whatever it's worth, is going to define the first half of
absolutely.
Even an appropriation act, a supplementary appropriation, will almost certainly not be passed within a month of a new government taking over. So you're probably going to have this budget define almost not certainly going to have. The second point is that there are structures. Issue arising from it, which anybody who takes over will have to deal with. Obvious one is there are two that are obvious. The large size of the deficit. It's not going to go away. The deficit is there. You either reduce this proposed spending, or you increase the revenue to deal, or you restructure the budget in some way as to minimize the deficiency. That's one. The second one is this.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, the budget has already anticipated this conversation we're in. So we know that the budget has provided for subsidies only for the tenure of President
Buhari. Yes.
Exactly. So the incumbent has to position the easier there and leave the subsidy unprovided for, and therefore, as a matter of, the subsidy has disappeared, which
falls away.
Which will be my policy preference. Or if he wants to put it there, he has to insert it there and then look for the money. So the structural deficiencies or structural attributes of the budget as designed today will remain. But of course, the priorities are just
may change.
So that is something.
Absolutely, sir. So the big elephant in the room, I'm just going to go straight there. The biggest conversations, obviously, around the budget has been the rising public debt profile. And we all know that the federal government, people have consistently commented on the doubt about the federal government's ability to continue to move to meet its debt obligations. Our Honorable Minister for Finance, Budget and National Planning has consistently assured the public that the federal government has no plan to restructure its debt, but rather remains committed to meeting its obligations as and when the fall due. She has also attempted to allay concerns around the impact of foreign exchange risk on our external debt obligations. Specifically, I recall that she noted that the risk level remains moderate, as only 39% of our total debt profile are external borrowings. So in your opinion, sir, are the concerns around federal government's ability to meet its debt obligations genuine? Are they exaggerated? Are they non-existent?
I believe the concerns around the debt obligation are genuine, they're cogent, they're tangible. And indeed, I have long before now, before the issue has become mainstream, I've long called attention to the increasing debt service obligations. And the fact that they appear to me unsustainable at current revenue level. And the argument I have always been persuaded, and I recall in the days on which I had a program, the policy, and that's before 2015. I think that program was 2011. I recall expressing the view that, yeah, you could look at debt to GDP ratio, which tells you that debt is yet a concern, but you could also look at your debt service obligations over your revenue, which
Absolutely.
Will get you alarmed.
Yes.
And I have always asked myself that, given my knowledge of the structure of the Nigerian economy, that which ratio will give you more insight? Is it the debt to GDP or the debt service over revenue? And I've always been persuaded that, given the fact that our revenues don't flow out of our GDP to the effect to the extent that we're not a tax-driven revenue nation.
Absolutely.
So therefore, you should be more concerned with the revenue implications of this thing. Do I have the revenues to meet?
Consistently meet, yeah, the obligations. Yeah.
Exactly. And so I've always worried about it. I've always expressed the view. They've always been as far back as many years ago, even early in this Buhari regime. I recall a debate between myself and at the public and Mr. Ben Akwebes, in which they always pushed back and said, no, it's not a concern. But I think the chickens are coming. I see the IMF expressing concerns about debt service levels. I see the markets concerned. But I'm not alarmed. And that's, I believe that this particular government has not creativity to deal with the issue. But I think that any government that accepts market-based strategies, that is open to investment, that opens up the economy to investment, that focuses on fiscal restructuring, revenue drives, things that would, and that focuses on growing the economy so that the economy revenue levels can grow along, can find solutions. So my focus will be on growing the revenue.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir. So just on the back of that, a lot of people that are not as knowledgeable as yourself and other people who understand economy and fiscal policies and what have you, some of us have sat down and we've tried to understand and analyze why in 2023 we're having to run two parallel budgets simultaneously between January and March of this year. So just for our benefit, can you please explain why the supplemental 2022 budget was necessary, especially given the fact that it will have to be funded via additional domestic borrowing, which would raise the budget deficit further. In 2022, it will raise the 2022 budget deficit further by close to another 1 trillion naira. So My lame question, and which I know that a lot of people would also want to express, is could these spendings have been appropriated in 2023 under the current, you know, Appropriation Act? What mischief does the extension of the implementation of the 2022 serve when we are still going to have to go and raise, you know, debt to cover this expenditure anyway?
So excellent questions, Tosin. Let me first of all, I don't agree that there was an imperative supplemental. So using the words in your budget, I don't believe it was absolutely necessary. Those additional expenditures, as you suggest, as you hint at, could conveniently have been inserted in the 2023 supplement, 2023 appropriation. And that would have been the same legal effect. You would have had the same exact list. And that point was made on the Senate during the consideration of that supplement. But I think the government wanted it to be seen as a 2020 spending. And the argument was that the events they're concerned with, that the supplemental budget tried to deal with, was the floodings, which had impact on water supply, which had impact on roads and all of those, so that the event happened in 2020. Therefore, the practical effect, of course, is that it's the same thing. We're going to be spending the money in 2020. That's the first thing. The second, so while they chose to do it that way, yeah, it was a preference, it's okay to do so, but it could easily have been spent in 2020, The second thing that was done was that the implementation of the 2022 budget itself was extended to March. So both the supplemental and the original trend are going to be disbursed on
until March. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, that's the other of what was done. So we've extended the execution of the 2022 main budget to March, and the supplemental budget
along with the supplemental.
Exactly. So right. Both of the spent disbursed on March. Now the reason for that, legally I can, because the budget is meant to be a law mandating or authorizing spending from January to December of the year in which it's appropriated. And in the absence of a specific legal extension of the spending to any other period subsequently, that budget is assumed to have lapsed.
So
we needed to put the provision extending the appropriation of the three. And then, of course, there's the third leg in that we have the three budget itself, as you've excellently counted, passed or signed into law on January. So we have the curious, there will be three legal basis spending between January and March. But I think that perhaps at the, it's okay. What has been is legal and
Okay, sir. So interesting. One of the things, one of the other lingo that I've heard, you know, very consistently since December, during all the budget reviews and all of that that happened in the two legislative houses and even in different other public fora where conversations have been had, is conversations around the CBN ways and means advances. So we now know that President Buhari has sought to restructure the ways and means advances from CBN, which now stands at about 23.7 trillion by way of securitization. So again, this is another conversation that has come to mainstream with the passage of the budget. So for the benefit of our listeners, can you explain what these ways and means advances are and the implication of this to the growing line of credit, of this growing line of credit from the central bank, especially in the light of the World Bank's warning that increased borrowing from central bank would continue to balloon our fiscal pressures and the country's expenditure? Is this a normal practice? And when there are ways and means advances from the central bank, how long is it expected for that line of credit to carry on before it is repaid? And why are we now to securitize these loans? As a business person in Nigeria, how does this affect me? What should I be looking at or paying attention to?
Excellent question again, Tosi. And this is a matter that is of particular concern to me and that should be of particular concern to most Nigerians. First of all, ways and means provided for, the CBN Act says that because we recognize that government is a going concern and there can be emergency, the CBN Act allows government to borrow on a kind of temporary overdraft basis from the central bank. But it imposes restrictions on what those, on the structure of those. They're temporary, they must be repaid by the end of the year. They must not exceed, I think, 5% of the government's revenue for the previous year. Now, and I would add that there's an expectation of transparency. So these things are the CBN book, everybody's supposed to see them. I think, it, first of all, it raises governance, especially at the CBN and in the federal government. The issue has become mainstream precisely because the government is way out, and this is going to blow up if it's not resolved before existing government leaves the administration. Before then, there was no transparency around. And some of us had always had rumors, at least for the last 6 years, that there were growing ways and means lending between the CBN and the government, and there was absolutely no. We thank God that because of democracy and term limits, constitutional restrictions on two-term, we now know that the amount of the ways and means is in excess of 20 trillion naira. And we're now trying to securitize them and, in effect, regularize them. The truth is that they've been enacted, in my view, illegally. All those legal restrictions in CBN Act are regarded. They've not been repaid at the end of every year. They've just continued to accumulate. And they've been in excess of any reasonable percentage of per year revenue. So they became an unappropriated, in my view, illegal source of funding.
Federal.
Now, what are the effects of those things? Because they're, you see, the CBN has been claiming to fight him. But I have always argued that the most inflationary phenomenon in our economy has been these ways and means. It's unauthorized spending, it's not backed up by real money, it's just printing of currency. That's the bottom line. The CBN, because it's a print, just prints new currency and hands it over to the federal government. So it's highly, and so if we've suffered from inflation, devaluation, all of those things, I would argue that the CBN has been a strong contributor to that, rather than some of the other shadows. The good thing is that this will come to an end. I agree that the way out is digitize them, mainstream them, let it come on the, let us create security to regulate, and then hope that corporate governance at the central bank will be strengthened going forward.
Okay, wow, interesting. So I'd like us to quickly go back to this issue of the finance bill. One of the good that a lot of people have attributed to this current administration has always been the fact that, you know, against every appropriation plan for any fiscal year, there is always, you know, a complementary finance bill. And even though it tries to push and boost their ability to increase, you know, government revenue generation, it's also many times come with fiscal incentives that also, you know, boost and bolster activities in different sectors of the economy that is of priority. The 2023 finance bill, however, a lot of people, having reviewed it, as a matter of fact, it's been very controversial, and a lot of people have seen, you know, a seeming deviation from this posture of the federal government over the past few years. There doesn't seem to be much in terms of incentives, you know, in that bill. Even so, what we have seen is that many of the existing fiscal incentives that hitherto existed have been cancelled, while we see increment in tax rates, you know, for the petroleum industry, increase in the scope of excise duty application and other things. So basically, it looks like it is to enhance the ability of the government to increase their capacity to, you know, drive revenue within the year. Now, given that we are already dealing with a lot of pressing economic challenges, rising inflationary pressure, and the very apparent cost of doing business crisis that is plaguing the nation, how do you gauge the federal government's approach, and how will this likely impact businesses generally and our already fragile real sector?
A great question. Let me go back to fundamentals. I sympathize with the government, but I also suggest that the original sin, come to call it, the original sin of public policy and economic management since 2015 has been the lack of openness to market, the preference for control over investment, the focus on borrowing rather than investment, the suspicion of private capital, preference for, in effect, government spending, which is limited and they have to borrow in. So those are the original problems. So we've designed an economic policy orientation that has marginalized private capital, and the result has been a steady decline in foreign direct investment and even portfolio and other investment. We have focused all our infrastructure attempts on borrowing, all of that. Investors have taken a wait and see. And then, and all of those policy has limited economy. So in the last 8 years, we basically had two recessions. And in between those recessions, we've had, for me, that is what has to change first. Adopt a pro-growth strategy, open up to investment, engage in structural reforms, dispense with, I'm sorry, Nigerians still don't understand this, dispense with petroleum subsidies, rationalize your exchange rate management so that investment can come. Having two exchange rates with a difference of over 300 naira between them almost certainly guarantees that reasonable, desirable investors will wait and see in relation to.
Yeah, and that you are also encouraging a lot of arbitrage.
Yes, we're facilitating arbitrage, corrupt, and market distorting activities. We're creating the wrong incentives. For instance, the biggest incentive in the Nigerian economy today is if I could find a way to get $1 million from Mr. Emefiele, a billionaire. And that's what people will focus on. People focus on the incentives that yield the best returns.
Yes.
And that's what the incentive structure. So if we do all that, the economy will grow, revenue, your capacity to generate additional revenue grow, and you generate investment across your economic sector, and business environment will feel better. And a rising tide, as they say, will lift all boats and ships, and everybody will be happier. So trying to squeeze additional revenues out of a shrinking economy, a low growth economy, a recessionary economy, is a strategy, in my view, that is to fail. But that is what they're trying to do. They're trying to squeeze as much revenue as possible without just remedying the original sin of death, which is. So I'm hoping, as we mentioned, and I'm optimistic actually, that we may have a change in that policy, and hoping that any of our top frontline candidates likely to will have the understanding to change in favor of a private capital driven markets approach that encourages investment and facilitates economic growth.
Yes. So let me go to my next question very quickly. And this is one thing that my ear has caught in discussing with the younger, you know, population of Nigerians and business owners. So the finance bill has sought, amongst other things, you know, to include digital assets in the pool of assets to which capital gains tax applies. I mean, coming from a government that looks to have taken a very negative posture against some specific digital assets in the past, and a central bank that has almost by their posture given the digital assets, specifically cryptocurrencies, diminishment in legitimacy. How do you reconcile, you know, this government's position now to bring this pool of assets into its revenue pool? Is this reflective of a change in their posture and approach and the way that they have viewed these assets, or do you think it's just a catch-22? I mean, whether we believe or we are even promoting, you know, the growth of this market segment, let's just take whatever we can from the sector because there is activity going on there, and obviously there could be room for us to also, you know, bolster government revenue from there.
I think it's the latter. I think a little bit of my legal background kicked in as you were asking that question, and some phrases came to my mind. If you come to equity, you must come with you can't approbate and reprobate. So I think that's what government is. I think they just want revenue. They don't remember these things. They're not one of the problems in recent times. It hasn't been coherent and consistent. It approbates, it seeks to eat its cake and have it. But there's a structural issue also that might explain this. So all of those actions try to destroy the viability of digital assets and cryptocurrency in the Nigerian economy, were done at the central bank, at the monetary policy end. Yes. The finance bill and revenue generation and the budgets and little of the ministry of. So again, this is another issue, that of the lack of coordination between fiscal and
monetary policy.
Most recently, in relation to the changing currency, which the Minister of Finance demonstrated publicly that she was not aware and probably not in support of such a mess.
Yes.
So that is the structural issue the central bank is doing its own. The Minister of Finance is, they're not coordinating, and therefore they're not. And so that's one of the things that policy should address as dysfunction. And this is just that. But what is the posture towards digital assets, cryptocurrencies, and how do we want to then benefit?
Absolutely, sir. On a quick note, and just looking broadly at the federal government's medium-term debt management strategy, how do you view this strategy, and are there any pointers that you have on how we can deal with this, you know, a bit more tactically? And I think most importantly, if you had the chance to advise, you know, the incoming government on how they can, you know, espouse the debt management strategy in a way that we are able to get out of where we've currently find ourselves and have a more efficient, you know, balance between, you know, revenue and expenditure framework for the government. What are the low-hanging fruit advice that you would give them, even as they're looking to develop strategy for the next couple of years, as this particular strategy would wind up with the end of the current administration?
Okay, thank you. I am happy that we're at a transition. I'm happy that we have an opportunity to review comprehensively the direct fiscal policy and strategy. When people ask me, I've had that question, should we be worried? The only reason I'm not worried is that we have an opportunity for, and so what I look forward to is a comprehensive of economic policy and then fiscal side of it. What do I like to see? I like to see, first, as I've hinted in this, I like to see a change in direction in favor of market, in favor of private capital, in favor of investment, in favor of now that, because things lead to each other. You can't take the approach you've taken and then hope that revenues will grow. So when we feed in from that change in economic direction direction towards of markets and capital and investment and growth, we will then need to accompany that with a comprehensive fiscal review. Clearly, I think tax efficiency has to go up, and we have to make our tax collection systems not necessarily increase in tax rates at this point, because hey, it's not a good time yet. But yes. Effectiveness of collection across economic sectors, and not just focused on the few people who are willing to pay taxes, across the breadth, leveraging the reforms in tax administration that have happened in some states, across the country, the federal government and the state, and then focusing on enhancing revenue and investment and growth in the economy. Those would be my big picture issues. I think that precisely the problem with the current approach is that it has too taxed. It has focused on the bits and pieces rather than on the big picture. And it's the big picture that needs to change. Yes. And unfortunately, we have not seen that. But I think it will happen. And the reason it will happen or must happen is that we're in the currently uncertain. But I think, like I've said earlier, in the earlier part, I think we have the capacity to significantly increase investments, increase growth, increase revenues. Yes. And I think that works.
So thank you so much, sir. On a final note, for the benefit of a lot of our listeners who are members of the business community in Nigeria, what headwinds do you foresee that businesses would likely face in 2023, or should I say in the first half of 2023, and how do you think businesses can successfully navigate the very difficult economic terrain, dire fiscal, monetary and economic projections that have been floating around, particularly in relation to 2023, or should I say the first half of the year, which is likely, you know, to go on, you know, based on the 2023 appropriation, at least before any intervention from any new administration when that has been shepherded in?
Okay, thank you. It's been a very interesting comment. One, the risk of global recession. If you look at global data, growth is declining across advanced economies. Projections for growth in 2023 by the IMF and the World Bank are significantly reduced. And for some major economies, that's something to watch out for, because these things tend to affect the rest of the world. They affect oil prices, Nigeria. Specifically to Nigeria, the risk of the imminence of policy change, especially in relation to the petroleum subsidies and exchange rate, both of which in the short term will present some shocks to business. Of course, the increase, the removal of the subsidies will mean increased logistics, operational transportation costs, and the exchange rates harmonization. There's no way you slice it that it doesn't lead to some devaluation at the official market.
Yes.
So those two will almost certainly happen. But those who, I would also argue, will have medium to long, and businesses should just base up, stop in the short term and then focus on benefits. In terms of larger markets, rationalizing the way economy. On the positive side, technology comes to be a growth driver. People should develop it. We've had improvements in infrastructure that can only be consolidated going forward. Lagos Blue Line, Second Niger Bridge, Lagos Deep Sea Ports, all of those Ogun Agro Allied Airport, things like that are positive, and I anticipate that structures will continue to. The fintech space, finance sector, and the technology and the merger of and technology is something that excites me. We continue to focus on how that manifests the benefit of business.
I have absolutely and thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, Mr. Agbaji. Thank you very much for making time out of your busy schedule to discuss with us today. We are glad that we got the opportunity to receive from your wealth of knowledge on today's matter of discussion. We would also like to say a very big thank you to all our listeners for tuning in. We wish you a very happy and prosperous new year ahead. And as always, the conversations continue on our social media handles. Do remember to send us your comments and thoughts on today's episode.
Thank you for listening. This podcast is brought to you by Deal HQ Partners. To find out more about our services, visit www.dealhqpartners.com.
See you on the next episode.